With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome back to The Female Gaze, a podcast celebrating pop culture that embodies the female gaze and investigates what that even means. We're still trying to figure it out. Joining me today is my brilliant co-host, Alana Rodriguez. Hello, Alana.
Hello. It's me, brilliant.
Did you just say it's me, brilliant?
Yeah. I love okay. that. I love, yeah.
You're setting the bar high for yourself.
I've had a great week.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That's a lot of fucking, not literally, just like,
I don't even know what that means
like
if it's
great.
Not literal.
It's definitely not been a lot of fucking, it's been like a lot of fucking cool shit.
Yeah.
Cool shit
okay.
happening.
Which now we're just shortening to fucking.
We're just
I love
fucking,
that. You
yeah.
just fill in the blank at the end yeah. of that sense. In just a few moments, we'll be joined by filmmaker Jenna Lorenzo, who has a new movie in theaters right now. It's called Les Bomb and is a very unique take on the home for the holiday genre, so it's very timely. And it's also simultaneously a coming out story. So Jenna stopped by to talk about her experience as a first-time woman director, not only directing iconic Hollywood stars like Bruce Dern, Cloris Leachman, and Kevin Pollak. The cast is totally nuts in this movie. But she also stars in it. And it's a very personal story, and Alana and I related to it on many levels, I would say.
Yeah.
And we think you guys will, too. So Jenna will be here in just a few minutes. We also play the hot takes wheel with her, and it was a hot one. Again, just a reminder, though, to please tweet or DM us your ideas to put on the wheel. We want to know what you're talking about so we can get in on it, too. But first, we're going to kick off a new segment on the show called Float Your Boat. Alana and I made a deal that she didn't have much choice in making with me, that every time I say the name of the segment, she has to make a tugboat sound.
Yeah, but can you do it for me first so I can just imitate?
Toot, toot.
That's a train. Mm. Toot, toot, honk.
Oh, tugboat's like
honk.
Deeper.
Honk.
It's not a honk.
Wah.
Like, you have such a deeper voice than I do naturally. I think oh. my toot toot yeah. sounds like a train, and your toot toot will sound like
toot,
a tugboat.
Toot,
okay.
Toot.
Okay. We'll be working
toot.
On this, guys. All right,
float your
anyway,
boat. Toot, toot.
The Float Your Boat segment is for us to make basically recommendations to you of cool shit that we are watching, reading, listening to, whatever, just so we can kind of expand our topic horizons beyond what our particular guest is here to talk to us about. So we're just going to give it a shot. So on today's Float Your Boat, I'm going to kick us off here. I would like to, well, how do I want to set it up then? I guess what's floating my boat this week
toot, toot.
is the movie Can You Ever Forgive Me, which is in theaters right now and is receiving a lot of awards, recognition, nominations, which I'll get to in a second. But just in case you aren't familiar, Can You Ever Forgive Me is the dramatic Melissa McCarthy movie, as some people are referring to it. She stars in it. It's about a real-life writer named Lee Israel, who was a celebrity biographer in the 70s and 80s. And she started to fall on hard times financially. So in 1991, she started forging letters supposedly written by famous writers and selling them to collectors to make quick cash. So the movie is kind of about that. It's also set in New York in the winter. It has this amazing jazz soundtrack. And the three lead characters in the film are all queer. And it's interesting because I didn't know that going into the movie. And it's not part of their obstacles in the film. It's just the fabric of their lives. It's not commented on. It, you know, it is addressed and it's part of their stories, but it's not like, oh, and by the way, you know, she's gay and now we're going to show how horrible that is for her. So that was a nice change of approach to that. And yeah, so the Golden Globe nominations came out this morning, which is why I thought in particular to recommend this movie because it did get some nominations. Melissa McCarthy was nominated in the acting category, as was her co-star Richard E. Grant, which was great. But I want to also shout out the amazing director Marielle Heller, who also directed the film The Diary of a Teenage Girl, which came out a few years ago, or probably a little longer than that now, but in the last 5 years. That was her first film, which was another awesome female-centric movie, and feels very different from the new movie. But I think when you consider the directorial lens that is applied to both, they feel very similar. They're very lived-in, real, relatable stories of interesting women of different ages, a teenage girl and a woman in the middle of life. Anyway, I was disappointed to see this morning, as many were, that no women were nominated for Best Director for the Golden Globes in 2019.
Really?
Yeah. And, you know, it's become such a chicken or the egg discussion of, okay, well, were there that many women who directed movies this year that could have been nominated? And the answer is yes. There's actually extensive lists of wonderful movies directed by women this year, but surely there's never enough. If there were more women directing, we would have more women to nominate. But it's just kind of crazy because I don't know if you remember at last year's Golden Globes, this also happened, and Natalie Portman presented that category. And she said on stage, as she was about to announce the winner, she said, "And here are the all male nominees," and then listed all the men. And the audience gasped and the world gasped because it's like, oh my God, she actually said it out loud and acknowledged this huge oversight. And apparently the Hollywood Foreign Press doesn't care and is like, yeah, we're going to do it all over again.
Yeah, but are we shocked?
No. I mean, yeah, I don't know. This falls into the category of always shocked, never shocking. Yeah. I don't know. It's like both feelings at the same time.
Yeah, it's one of those things also that I feel like, I don't know, but like, I often lose hope. Like, you always have so much, like, I don't know, hope, I guess, going into a new year. Because you're like, okay, maybe things will change. Like, the political climate and social and blah, 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 blah. And then all of a sudden, like, the Golden Globe nominations come out. And you're like, oh, great. Good to know that nobody heard anything.
Right. And, of course, we never expect change to happen overnight. It never does. But you think, okay, can we have one out of five, maybe?
Yeah.
One out of five? I mean, I don't know if you saw the movie Private Life on Netflix that Tamara Jenkins directed, but that was one of my favorite movies of the year so far, and she did a fucking phenomenal job. I mean, there are just many deserving women. I thought Mariel Heller was one of them. And anyway, so that did not float my boat, but the movie does. I highly recommend it. Also have to give a shout out. Killing Eve got nominated for Best Drama and Sandra Oh for Best Actress in that show. Basically, every brilliant friend that I have says that's their favorite show of the year. It's just fucking awesome. And to reference our first episode of the podcast, Star is Born had a big day with Globes nominations. So congrats to Gaga.
Gaga!
And Bradley and the rest of the crew. I do want to say one thing. I will never understand why Shallow is the song being picked out of that movie.
Why?
And not I'll Never Love Again.
What?
Because I'll Never Love Again is a classic, epic love ballad that I think you could listen to on the radio 30 years from now and it will sound like a legit song.
Shallow, I disagree.
Shallow only makes sense in the context of the movie.
No, I have had You're a Liar and you are hating because that song is fucking good. Shallow is like,
yeah,
first of
great,
all.
Yeah, but in the movie.
Yeah, but out of the movie too. I listen
know.
To Shallow once a day. And I imagine myself just like singing to you.
Oh, to me specifically.
Yeah. Me and you, like you do
because
the,
you know it'll
like,
drive me crazy. Something.
Yeah, and then I start, and then like you come in, and then you do the thing.
Oh,
but I feel like
fantasy.
People could, like, it's on the radio.
Well, I know. So I was in a Lyft this weekend, and they had Z100 on, and fucking Shallow came on, and I was laughing hysterically to myself. I wanted to turn to everyone in the Lyft because, you know, it was a ride share because
you
got to save where you can. And, you know, I wanted to be like, this is not a real song on the radio, right? Like, this it's fiction. You can hear the crowd in the song. It just doesn't make sense to me anyway.
You're just not appreciating
it's
the
a very
music.
Good song. The point is, I'm happy for A Star is Born. And congrats to everyone. And next year, hopefully, we'll see more women. And that's what's floating my boat. Okay.
Toot, toot.
Beautiful. Thank you.
Okay,
right,
my
Lana,
turn.
What's floating your
okay,
boat?
Okay, guys. I actually, it's not, it's a little more corporate America, but it's floating my boat because I feel like it's so relevant right now because it's end of year. Now's the time where, like, us, I get men and women, but I'm going to speak for women because that's what this article is about. We're going in and we're asking for like promotions and raises, right?
Yeah, it's year-end review time, baby.
Year-end motherfucking review. And I fucking love doing year-end reviews because I feel like that's a time for me to go in and be like, this is all the shit that I'm technically supposed to be doing. This is all the shit that I did. Like, what's up? give me that money.
Yeah.
Right? So anyway, I was reading this article. It's on Elle, because I'm a lady. And it is called How
lady
to...
lady in French. Go on.
That is really fucking clever. I didn't even say that because of that. I just thought it was dainty. Because I read Elle, and I'm like, you know, fashion and shit. And it's called How to Prep Before Asking for a Raise. Mm. The writer, her name's Michaela McKenzie, so shout out Michaela. But I thought it was really fucking sick because... And I guess we could, like, link to this, like, with social, whatever. We could link to all this shit.
Yeah, yeah.
We're just discovering. Whatever.
We'll tweet share it.
We'll tweet share,
check out our Twitter.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So what I thought was so excellent about this article is it gives you, specifically for women, tips on how to go into the room and not feel defeated off the bat. Because I feel like it is so fucking, I mean, everyone can agree, it's really fucking intimidating. Like, you go into a room and it's usually a man, senior leadership, and mm-hmm. you have to, like, go in and just be like, hello, sir, can I have some more? Like, mm-hmm. it's, like, so fucking awkward.
Yeah.
And I remember 1 year, 2 years ago, and I wish I read this article before, I went in and I was feeling one of those, like, I don't know, I'm Puerto Rican and we were raised, like, be grateful and, like, you know, accept the pat on the back and, yeah. like, not that Puerto Ricans are... never grateful, but it's like, be grateful for these opportunities and, like, celebrate, and it's mm-hmm. wonderful and great. So I went into my year-end review not prepared to ask for anything.
Yeah.
And I remember my boss at the time, he was like, you know what, you're doing such a great job, and we're gonna give you a 3% raise.
Yeah.
And I literally looked at him and I was like,
bitch,
you,
I live in New York City, that's not what? Even the inflation.
Like, I literally eat tuna every fucking day. Anyone that I've ever lived with is like, oh, Alana lives here, she eats fucking turkey bacon and eggs for breakfast and a can of tuna for dinner because I'm fucking poor. So I went in and I looked at him and I just remember being like, thank you so much for the opportunity. I walked out, I sat down at my cube and I was like, no, fuck that shit. I have done so much this year and you're going to look at me and say, oh, you did a great job and here's 3%. I'm like, that is two fucking pickles on my paycheck. Yeah. So I went back in and I was like, listen, man, with all due respect, you can keep it. Give it to someone.
Wow.
Add it to someone else's. I don't know what you got to do. But, like, that does nothing for me. And I feel like I work so fucking hard.
And
like,
how do you respond to that?
He was awkward. He didn't know what to say.
What did you end up getting?
I didn't. I ended up getting 6%.
Oh.
Probably because I was being an asshole.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I was just like, you know what? Like, keep it. Like, I'm so appreciative of everything, and I don't want you to think that I'm not, but just keep
it. Pay me what I'm worth.
Pay me what I'm worth, bro. Yeah. And I know what men around me make, and I know that I do a really good fucking job.
How do you know what they make?
Because I asked.
Yes.
I asked them. Yeah, I asked them.
Yeah. That's something I have to be better at. It's really uncomfortable for me.
It is so uncomfortable because you don't want to. And honestly, like, you only really get the leg up if you're a senior and there's people underneath you who are men and you know their salary because they come asking, you know, you for advice or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And not for nothing, but one of the guys who I work with, like, he, two levels below me, made double what I made when I was his position. You know what I mean? And it's like, at the end of the day, like, everyone needs to make a good fucking salary. And I am so happy for people that have that. But all the more reason for me wanting to be prepared going into the next one. So the year after, I literally did all my research. And this was one of the tips in the article, too. Like, mm-hmm. do your research. Mm-hmm. Write down what you do. And my mom says, Lani, write down everything that you do in a notepad. I'm like, oh, my God, Mom, literally. But it's true.
Yeah.
Because you go back. And I remember the next year I went back and I was like, hey, man, before you speak, give me 2 seconds. I'm going to pitch you why I think I deserve X amount more. I asked for like $20,000 more.
Mm-hmm.
Really. And I feel like we should be transparent because no one is transparent about
this.
Totally. And as a woman, like, really, that is fucking nothing, right? So I looked at what people were making in the industry. I wrote down everything I did. I wrote down what I'm supposed to be or what I'm going to do with the clients that have given me, like, stellar feedback, all mm-hmm, of that stuff. Mm-hmm. And I went in and I really didn't make it an option. I was like, this is what I deserve. And this, I know for a fact, I will go above and beyond for you. Like, you scratch my back, dude, I'll scratch your back because this is how it should be.
Right.
And I feel like not a lot of people are given these tips and, like, everything from, like, taking on more responsibility to writing down what you do to tracking the sales if you're, like, you know, bringing in money to the business, all mm-hmm. of that great stuff. And also, like, talking yourself up, like, fucking Issa Rae and Insecure, get your ass in the mirror now every time. And I remember going into this review now, and thank God my boss is, like, a fucking awesome guy and knows what I deserve. And I went in and I said all this stuff and he was like, no, I completely agree.
Yeah.
And I'm like, great. But I feel like more women, and because he and I have a great relationship, it was a little easier. But back a few years ago, like, and so many women now, myself included, like, you go into rooms with really intimidating people and you're almost made to feel like you have to, I mean, you do, you have to fight for it. And it's just a pain in the ass because sometimes they're like, okay, here you go. I'm like, was that fucking easy?
Right. Yeah. I mean, but, you know, it might not always go well.
No.
Sometimes you'll hear no.
No.
But
and if
they're never going to give it to you if you don't ask for it.
Totally.
That's not the world we live in.
Yeah. And it's like the last thing you want is to go in and be like the, quote, emotional woman, right? Who's like coming in like super strong and like crying. And not that you're supposed to be crying, but like people get emotional.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, like, yes. I have two thoughts about that. I mean, it's not inherently emotional to state your worth and ask for what you deserve.
Right.
If you happen to be emotional having that conversation, great, because I'm tired of fucking pretending like emotions are bad in the workplace. They are amazing. The only reason that they have any stigma is because men are in most positions of leadership in companies. I had a meeting with a guy who was very high up in my company about a year ago, and he pulled me into his office because he wanted my honest opinion about some problems he had heard about in my department, right? So it was supposed to be this very, like, off-the-record, candid conversation. And I started some sentence to him with, we feel like blah, 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 blah. And he was like, okay, I have to stop you right there. Feel is my trigger word. And I was like, excuse me?
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah, I don't know what to do with that when I hear that I'd rather leave emotions out of it. And I was so confused by that. I kind of just tried to pivot and rephrase. And then when I was leaving that company, he and I had another little heart to heart on like my last day over a tequila that he poured for us, which was very sweet, like very well-intentioned guy, right? But was not aware of how he was really going on the wrong track with this way of thinking. And he was like, do you have any parting words for me, advice? I was like, yeah, I'd actually like to revisit when you told me feelings are your trigger word. I was like, feelings are what make your employees come in here fired up, ready to do good work, passionate. Like, that is what brings out the best in your employees.
Right.
And yeah, there's going to be another side to that, which is that they're going to feel it when they're being disrespected or, you know, not empowered to do their jobs. Those are all feelings, and that should be relevant to how we are going about our business.
Completely agree.
And
he
seemed to really hear that and clearly had just never been asked to reexamine his feelings about that word and that idea.
Yeah, anyway. I think it's really about just training senior leadership, also corporate America, to like reevaluate and look, just have a totally different outlook on what a workplace should be. Like, feelings should be okay. And you know what? Even now, I get freaked out sometimes because I'm a really fucking emotional person. Like, I'm a double Pisces. I got that Leo rising, but I'm a real emo person. And for me, anyone on my team, like, you're my family.
Uh-huh.
You're going to see me laugh, cry, sweat, blah, blah, blah. But in the back of my head, like, I was raised, and my mom will to this day die telling me, never cry in the workplace. You go in and get your shit together, but do not let them see you cry.
Right.
And I'm like, I agree with that. But I also feel like there are times where it's okay to show people that you're vulnerable, that you're feeling the pressure too, if it's like, you know, with your teammates.
And why would you not want your employees to be able to release that emotion and then move on with their fucking day?
Right.
Like, I don't want you to sit there and suffer trying to hold something in if you're upset about something all day. You're not going to be focused on your work. You're not going to be productive.
Right.
Like, you need to deal with your shit when you're having it. You know,
yeah.
And if like maybe that means today it's not the most kick-ass day that you're going to have in your job, but you'll like emote, you'll deal with your shit, and you'll probably come back tomorrow ready to move on.
Yeah, exactly. We're not fucking robots.
No, we shouldn't be suffering in silence.
No, like, not at all.
Drives me nuts.
I had one conversation super quickly because now I know we're going on a tangent, but I had one conversation with a coworker of mine, a male coworker, and we were having like a really intense conversation. Whatever, but he actually started tearing up when we were having the conversation.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, this was like a guy who's older than me, like obviously feeling the stress too. And we were just like talking, and he started crying. And I was like, yeah. And then I started crying, and I was like, let's fucking hug, bro. But like, just seeing that he was okay, I was like, this is the kind of work environment that I want to be in.
Yeah.
Because I don't fucking spend more time with y'all than my own family to sit here and be I motherfucking robot. I don't. Like, I need to do my shit. Let me have a moment. Let me cry.
Yeah.
For
seriously.
A second.
Yeah. Okay.
But
so,
yeah, great article.
Recommendations for 2019. More men who cry in positions of leadership, or just more women, or non-binary people, or people who have access to their feelings, because we're fucking human beings. Yeah,
I love that. Done.
Toot, baby.
Toot, motherfucking toot.
All right, well, that's today's Float Your Boat. We'll be right back with filmmaker Jenna Lorenzo.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Jenna Lorenzo, thanks for joining the show.
Thanks for having me.
Jenna is a filmmaker that we are very honored to have in the studio with us today because she has a movie out that we just saw a couple days ago called Les Bomb.
Awesome.
It was
yep.
great. And it was a great time. Would you just, for those who haven't seen the film yet, give the little plot rundown?
Yeah, it's about a young woman, played by myself, who brings her girlfriend home to meet the family. But then her like coming out efforts are thrown off the rails because her male roommate shows up and her family just assumes that that she's coming home to say that they're together.
Right. I would like to ask you a question. I'm trying to think as I'm asking it if it's really addressed in the movie. Why the fuck did she ever think that was going to be a good idea?
Like
to
just
do coming
this
home, at the same
yeah.
time, bring the girlfriend and come out.
I feel like I mean, sometimes in my life, I always think that it's better to, like, go in and go in strong uh-huh. and not overthink it.
Right.
But, like, the character is obviously very much overthinking it. But
right.
I think that when you're, like, approaching chaos, sometimes it's easy to get distracted by, like, what's actually the matter at hand.
Right.
Totally. Totally.
And so, like, oh, this is a good idea because I'm going to be so fixated on everything else except for what's most important.
Yeah. Right. I mean, well, and also it's a thing in the movie that she keeps wanting everyone else to just come out for her
because right.
she can't actually pull the trigger.
I was going
to
say that. I thought that was so interesting only because I feel like I would have done exactly the same.
Right.
Well, A, I would have definitely tried to come out with my girlfriend at a time like that. And then B, I would have been like, well, then you do it then. That'd be great. If you just want to like ease me into it and I'll come just like take it home.
Yeah, I'll be in the bathroom.
I'll do that. Great.
Give me a knock yeah. when it's done.
Throw that softball right over the home plate and then I'll hit it.
Got you.
Then I'll hit it.
I got you.
By the way, was there a picture of you as a child softball player
yes.
in the movie? Okay. And was that real?
Yeah. Amazing. It was like, it's like still in my bedroom. I just remember being like, they're like, do you have any pictures? I was like, well, I feel like playing softball is a bit on the nose and like a wink wink.
Yeah.
You know,
no,
and I was like,
it
okay,
was so great. Oh, yeah. There are many visual jokes in the movie, but that one was my favorite and very specific, but like
spot
it was
on.
Correct. Yeah.
My father's so proud of that picture.
Really?
Yeah. He's always like, it's a great picture. It's a great picture.
Like, yeah, I actually,
it's great.
My father in his, like, he calls it his lair where he like escapes from my stepmom occasionally, has a like 4 foot tall glossy photo of me playing softball hanging in it.
I
so
did
I guess
not
this
play
is real.
Softball, so I can't relate to you guys.
Bye.
Unfortunately,
you can see yourself
I'm
out.
Fired.
You won't show us next. Your credentials, madam.
I'm not gay.
There's actually this picture in my, because we shot the film in my childhood bedroom, house, everything.
That was your house.
That's my house. Yeah. And so there's a picture in the
Alana,
movie.
Close your mouth.
Yeah. There's a picture in the movie you can see in my bedroom somewhere where I'm like 12 years old in this like neon fluorescent dance outfit with like my hand like doing like that that 70s like dance style, and it's like this and
oh, yeah.
Kevin Pollak, who plays my father, he came up and saw the picture. He's like, oh, that's the gift that keeps on giving.
<It's> like, yes.
Yes, wait, by the way, he is so lovely in that movie.
Isn't he amazing?
I've always loved
God.
him, but he was lovely. Like, what a
yes.
even when he was being an asshole father that you want to murder, he was
but
also
he did
just
it
so
with love.
Like real.
Yeah. Yeah, he was like the type of dad that you're like, oh, I wish he was my dad.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like the just like spot. Everything was spot on. And even the angry assholeness came out of love for you.
Yeah.
For
right.
your character.
Yeah, he was incredible. Both him and Deirdre brought such a grounded.
Yeah, she was amazing too.
Yeah.
Who plays your mother.
They really ground the comedy.
Mm-hmm.
All of their actions are so clearly motivated.
Yeah.
Right.
I just loved working with I mean, everyone, really.
Yeah.
You could tell the chemistry was there for the whole family. I had no idea that was your childhood home, though.
Yeah, it's my childhood
home. Well, how was that, filming that
crazy.
There? The same thing? It was Thanksgiving there the year that you actually did that?
So on Thanksgiving, because we were shooting, I think, 4 or 5 days after Thanksgiving, I was storyboarding the movie with my actual family, taking pictures.
Oh my God.
Wow.
Like, putting them in position and, like, taking pictures with my camera. And that was my storyboarding. And, like, I I know my grandparents still don't know what was happening.
But they were there? They were part of it?
Yeah, I was like, I need you to stand over in the... There's, like, an actual picture of them on the porch, like, where that where Bruce is, like, talking to Cloris about catching us kissing.
Yeah.
And I have, like, the picture of them there. And I have the picture of me and my mom in the mirror and, like, all that stuff. It's...
Oh, my God.
Of all of your family who are depicted in that movie, are they the most flattered by the actors that played them?
My...
Your grandparents?
I mean, I think... I wonder
are
how
those
my,
two characters like a amalgamation of my, many
well,
grandparents?
Bruce is like, you know, the, he's pretty far from my... Well, actually, my uncle keeps saying, you know, he nailed it. And I was like, I don't know if grandpa wants to know that. Because, you know, all those jokes. But, like, my grandfather's, like, a very conservative guy.
Okay.
Like, he was, like, he's come, like, full circle, though. Now he's much more open-minded. But, like, three of his granddaughters came out of the closet.
Wow.
Which, like... For for somebody who is at like marching against like LGBTQ marriage, like he's come the way to like walking one of them down the aisle. So
is that
that's amazing?
So three granddaughters all on the same side of the family.
Yeah,
it's like okay, someone's got a gay gene.
I know.
There must be something in the water.
I know. Like our Thanksgiving is like. So gay.
Yeah.
I love that.
That's awesome.
Were you the first to come out of the three?
No, I was the middle gay child.
There you go. All right. There was a little padding.
Did it go chronologically by age?
It did.
Okay.
Yeah, it did. And I remember like seeing pictures on, like before any of us sort of came out, I sort of was identifying what was going on through social media because I'm like, I have a special friend too. It's like all these pictures with my friend.
But did you reach out to that cousin?
One, my younger cousin, I was like, well, come on, what's happening? And she like totally didn't like, she didn't like.
She wouldn't give it up.
She didn't take the bait. And I was like, all right. And so like, I always think that's so interesting because people are like, oh my God, it makes it so much easier. And it's like, no, everybody has to do it at their own time when they're ready.
Nothing makes anything
that's
easier.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Nothing.
No.
All right. Let's get into... You as a first-time director, right?
Mm-hmm.
First-time woman director, working with heavyweight producers and cast, a lot of whom were men, like very experienced men in the industry.
Mm-hmm.
How much did you have to, well, how comfortable were you even in that role? How much work did you have to do like with yourself? And then how much did you have to fight for their respect, not implying that they weren't respectful, but to like, to trust you enough.
Yeah. I mean, there were definitely these like moments that were kind of pivotal in terms of me seeing where I had respect.
Uh-huh.
Like very clear moments. Like for instance, like even like with like Bruce, there was one moment where like he came onto set. We had to very quickly get a close up of him,
mm-hmm.
and like my DP kept going in for a pickup when we were on Bruce's clothes.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, no, we have to keep the camera on Bruce. And he did it again. And I was just like at a point where I was just like, keep the effing camera on Bruce's effing face. And Bruce's like, yes. And then, you know, and you could see where those moments sort of made a difference. And not necessarily that you have to get mad or raise your voice, but like being very clear in vision and being very clear that like there is an intention behind all these decisions. Yeah. I think that the more vocal I was about that, the more trust and confidence I gained.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And also at the end of the day, no one can tell your story better than you.
Yeah.
So give me a fucking break.
Right.
For sure.
Well, and it's funny because I knew of you because I've worked with your DP, Gabe. What's up, Gabe Stanley?
Yeah, he's amazing.
So he's amazing. And he's very like generous with his experience and his talents for directors who don't have as much experience on set. Like Gabe had way more experience than I had when we started working together.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was amazing at teaching me, but I also had to learn when to be like, Gabe, stop.
Right.
I'm telling you what I want.
Yeah.
You've explained all the options to me. I heard you the first time and I made a decision. So, you know.
Yeah. That's the thing. It's like it's wonderful working. Like we've worked together for so long.
Yeah.
So like we have a nice dialogue. Like even in like heated moments.
Right.
We're both very receptive to each other. And I think that's why the collaboration has been so like satisfying over the years.
Yeah.
And
what? Well, I was just going to ask like, so So you're a woman director, and I assume that you've thought about what that means, like what kind of direction you want to give people and what you want the camera to do mm-hmm. on set. And how do you sync up with a male DP about that? I think about that a lot. Like, can you say something has the female gaze when a man is holding the camera? So
right.
a man is like physically controlling the gaze.
Yeah. And yeah, no, I think it's an interesting conversation. Like, with Gabe in particular, we yeah. just talked so extensively about what every shot was supposed to feel like. And, like, yeah. down to, like, we wanted it to feel like this throwback of a family film. Like, even in how it was shot and how it looked, mm-hmm. to have that sense of nostalgia for, like, because, like, you want it to feel like, for me, I wanted it to feel like something we had seen before, but we hadn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that there was a relatability to it for people who are like, oh, yeah, like, why haven't we seen this before?
Right.
It just makes it easier than, like this shocking thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then in terms of, like, through the lens, this even though Gabe was behind the camera, we were so communicative about, like, what was every scene. What
yeah.
did it look
yep.
like? Why did it look like that?
Yep.
So I do think that it's just important to be really clear.
Uh-huh.
And
totally.
And like, there was definitely moments with, like, my producers that, like, I did have to fight for.
Yeah.
There's, like, there's a scene with my mom that they didn't want, they were thinking of cutting, which is
which
the
one,
emotional
if,
heart.
If we're allowed to talk about it.
Yeah. It's the emotional heart of the, like, when
you
I.
You guys in the parking lot?
Yeah.
I was going to say that with the cup.
How can you, that's the movie.
Right.
Well,
that
yeah,
scene is the
it's an interesting conversation,
yeah.
you know, and you know, and look, it was like a dialogue, and at the end of the day, like, they were like, oh my God, thank God you
yeah.
Didn't listen to, you know,
yeah.
and so, but they brought what I thought was most rewarding,
uh-huh.
working with a ton of men,
mm-hmm.
they were the exact opposite demographic that
yeah.
the movie was intended for,
right,
and so hearing everything that didn't read to them or didn't necessarily make the most sense made it a wonderful opportunity to look at this film and find how to make it as relatable as possible.
Oh, yeah.
And so there were times where I had to, like, you know, fight for things but, like, it was never an argument.
Mm-hmm.
They were so open and so supportive.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, everybody down from Bobby to Rob, Ryan, like, my financier, they all said, we don't know this story because we haven't had to come out and
right.
we are not a woman.
Right.
So, like, you're the one at the end of the day that has to, like, make these decisions.
Yeah. It's interesting. Yeah. I would imagine, like, the moments where having that specific and untraditional point of view helps you and when it makes things more difficult.
Mm-hmm.
When it's like, oh, there's, like something we – like, a voice we haven't heard a million times – and you're gonna really, like, hit this audience that's really hungry for this kind of content and a bigger audience,
mm-hmm.
but also, like, getting that audience. And so, like, people, even producers, understanding that there is inherent value in that, but then also feeling nervous about it.
Right, right.
Like, I would imagine it's a double-edged sword.
Yeah,
yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
There is, like, there was a funny moment on set, you know, funny in retrospect, where you know, all of the producers were on set this one day, and we were like, it was a tight schedule, we were moving really quickly, and it was a huge scene with all the women in the kitchen, and we're talking about, like, spin the bottle, and my mom does the jerk off motion.
Yeah,
right.
That made me laugh so hard.
And so with all the men on set, like, they were like, well, we think, like, you know, the jerk off motion might be funnier if it's, like, a little bit bigger. And I was like, we don't have time for this. And so then we're like,
okay.
So then we move past it, and I go back to Video Village, and I was like, I just want to point out that we just wasted 20 minutes on a jerk off motion in my lesbian film. Feels kind of ironic.
Oh, yeah.
But
yes.
Good.
I'm glad you
yeah.
said that.
Yeah. But they totally, like were like, yeah, you're right. Like, fine. And they laughed, and, you know, we moved on, and,
yeah.
you know, but that's the thing, like, every single step of the way, like, I can't articulate the amount of supportive, like, collaborative and how encouraging they were, like,
mm-hmm.
they, I, like, would not have ever been able to feel, like, I could have, like, it was just the pressures were high and we were moving so quickly that, like, their contagious energy is really what encouraged me to keep pushing forward. Because, like, we had two blizzards. We had 15 days. Like, it was crazy.
Yeah.
And so, like, yeah, there were, like, a few obstacles, but, like, it was awesome.
Yeah.
And if that was, like, one of the first LGBT movies that they worked on, like, if anything, it's such a blessing that now they can move forward with a new perspective.
Yeah.
You know, because, like, how rare to be in those situations now with someone who has a voice like yours and a story like yours that's going out into the big screen, you know, because hopefully, I would hope that moving forward, they would have taken a little piece of that and will be more open-minded or, you know, think about a lot more things than maybe they would have before.
Right. Well, you know, Rob Moran, who's the one, he's the one that, like, was like, yes, we're doing this. He plays the dad in South of Nowhere.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So he plays the dad in South of Nowhere.
I didn't connect
that.
Yeah, that's Nowhere. Funny.
So when he read the script, he was so aware that there was an audience hungry for this. And he was the one who, like, got the financier to be like, no, you don't understand. Like, I can't tell you how many fans come up to me and be like, aren't you the dad of South of Nowhere? And they get, like, so excited. Yeah. And so he really had this understanding. And then when he connected me to Bobby. So I was at a festival with Grand Late Stand, and Bobby saw it, and Rob knew we were both at this festival and connected us. And so Bobby and I had this whole conversation, and he read the script, and his daughter had come out, he didn't realize. He asked her if this is how she felt, and he's like, oh, I didn't know that. And she's like, yeah, like, I don't feel like that now, but, like, you know, when you're going through it.
Yeah.
And so it created a conversation with them. And he thought that was important. And so there was, like, a lot of miracles along this way.
Absolutely.
Yeah, the movie, for as fun as it was also, like, low-grade stressful for me.
I was gonna bring. I was wondering if you were going to bring that up. I wasn't sure if I was going to do that for you.
I feel like it's – the whole thing is still a conversation that I'm having with my parents that's, like, not finished and maybe will never be finished.
Mm-hmm.
But – so it's not, like, just relatable to, like, the moment of coming out, but just that constant, like, renegotiating.
The dance you do.
The dance. Your identity to your parents and with your parents and, yeah.
I think you said something important the other day. We went out for drinks after we saw your film, and Jesse
said,
"We were unloading." It went deep. It was deep rooted. And you said something like, "Is it my job or my responsibility that when someone like my grandma says, hey, do you have a boyfriend yet? And if Jesse or, you know, myself says no, not yet, do you then say, well, because I'm gay or because maybe it's a girlfriend?" Like, that alone is stress, because then you're almost forced to be like, okay, well, do I bring it up now or, like, how? Or it's that dance. It's all about that dance.
Because this is going to come out after Thanksgiving, so I'll give everyone the update on how this went. But I'm going to Thanksgiving in Kentucky with my dad to see his side of the family, who I haven't seen in a while and am not that close with. They're not, like, up on my day-to-day. And so I just said to my mom, I was like, I'm feeling a little bit of anxiety about going to Kentucky this year just because, like, I, like, haven't talked to any of them about, you know, my romantic life. And she was like, well, I don't know why that would need to come up. Like, it doesn't need to come up, and you know that they love you, so don't worry about it. And that's like,
no.
Yeah, but you don't understand, because if someone says, like, do you have a boyfriend, I have to make a choice about how I'm going to answer that question.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's the kind of constant negotiating that you're doing.
Yeah. I feel like it's kind of like that thing where it's like exhausting to have any lies.
Yeah.
Or, like,
totally.
Because then it's like, oh, okay, well, I don't want to say that. Okay, well, if it comes up, how am I going to dodge that?
Right.
Or if there's, like, an area that you don't want to talk about. Like, I felt, like, the same exact anxiety with, like, being a writer and, like, making no money. Like, I didn't want anybody to talk to me about work because
totally.
I felt like a failure.
Yeah.
Right.
And so and I think with that is that aspect of shame that you feel like you're seeking approval and hoping you get it and don't want to disappoint.
Right.
Totally. Yeah. It's having to, like, make yourself be very vulnerable in a casual conversation.
Right.
And, like, it could go so many different directions. And some of them are totally fine, great directions. And some of them are going to feel like shit. And you don't know what's going to happen.
Right.
So, like, that's the stress. Yeah. Anyway, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I was thinking about that last night, actually, because my wife and I went to this premiere. And there's this woman who was, like, I don't know, in her 80s, and she was like, hi, how are you doing? Did you come with anyone? And I was like, yeah, this is my wife. And then I'm like looking at her face, like reaction and your reaction, blank face. You know, and you're like, and then there's that moment that's like, and like that whole, you go on that whole journey of them seeing, acknowledging, trying not to react. Yep. And like,
yes.
And I'm you like, said, yeah, you hit it right before. It's like you're always coming out.
Yeah.
Like you've been coming out.
It's so annoying.
Yeah. It's really annoying. Tiring. Always. It's like, no, still gay.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. I have a question about how you cast Caitlin, who plays your girlfriend. Yes. Caitlin Maynor, is that how you say her last name?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so did you do like a chemistry test with her?
Yeah.
How did you discover her?
Well, so Caitlin and I actually met like 10 years ago.
Please randomly. Tell me you dated. Oh,
no, we didn't date, but I remember thinking she was cute.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, my wife's going to be like, what?
delete.
She's cute.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And she was like, so when we met, actually, she had a girlfriend and I had a boyfriend. That's how long ago it was.
Okay.
Hey.
And now she's engaged to a guy and I have a wife.
Look at that little swap.
But we met and then it was just like this like fleeting moment in time. And then I had this script years later and I'd reached out to this manager and I said, do you know anybody who'd be great in this role? And she was like, do you know Caitlin Maynor? And I hadn't put two and two together, but then we were sitting across from each other and I was like, still cute, remember you.
Ding ding ding,
this might work. That's funny.
Oh my god.
When you, well, okay, wait, before I bring this up, you mentioned Girl Night Stand, which I feel like we should explain what that is exactly.
Oh, so it's this short film that I did as a proof of concept, because when I tried to attach a star and a director for 6 years and I couldn't without any money, I had to do a proof of concept of just doing it myself. And then that went viral, which made it helpful to get the financing for the feature.
Right.
Yeah.
And I love the actress who was in Girl Night Stand. I loved her, Meryl. She was amazing.
Yeah.
But then when that went viral, it became its own piece of intellectual property that I had to treat separate to Lesbom.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. And so then because of that maybe being turned into something else, fingers crossed, then Lesbom, we had to recast because, okay. Yeah.
Right.
Got it. Yeah, she was very good in that. It was a different vibe than Caitlin has.
Yeah, totally different.
She like devoured you with her eyes.
And right. Yeah.
It's a whole other level of things happening.
Like, can't help it.
Yeah. No, I asked my wife too, like about like, oh, like the different types of chemistry.
Yeah.
Which is so interesting because like one's very much like this the excitement of meeting someone and like the moment, and then the other is more of like this like love that sort of happens over time,
right,
that you have to like really go through stuff together. Mm-hmm. And it is, and I'm so happy how it worked out because I think they both like serve like the stories and the characters so well. Mm-hmm. As actresses.
Totally
agreed.
Yeah. And you could see even like if we said the characters that you play in each of those things are the same person, that would be maybe an evolution of girls that you dated.
Yeah.
It's
right,
like
right.
The girl who kind of like turned you
right,
in your one-night stand and then the girl that you ended up dating. But did you intentionally like write it into the script that your girlfriend would be femme? Like, was that always?
Oh, yeah. That was always a choice.
Okay.
Because I felt like it just in terms of like, like the characters coming home and like it, and then the family just not putting pieces together. Mm-hmm. It makes it a bit more challenging.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
Even like when I would go to I don't know, there's that thing. Like when I was dating and I always loved women that were super femme.
Uh-huh.
And then I would end up dating people who were straight.
Yeah, that's the challenge.
And then I would wonder why life was dramatic.
Yeah. Right. Totally. Yeah. Yes.
Ringing bells over there. There's some bells ringing to my right.
There's a bell that rang.
But it made it, it added this opportunity to be playful with that humor. And then with like AB's character, it added another layer with that character as well.
Yeah.
The drug dealer.
Yeah, the drug dealer.
I was going to mention that because I think that it was so funny that she was like the instant, oh, there's a lesbian. Your whole family was like, yeah, dating the lesbian. It was like right. such an overt, but then they couldn't see
yeah.
right in front of them that you were also a lesbian.
Yeah, it's like it's so obvious sometimes. It's, yeah. it's where our blind spot is.
Yeah. People get confused by femi lesbians. It's just
even though she's wearing plaid. So come on.
Oh my God, Jazzy.
Yeah. So you have more things in the pipeline.
You know. So we're trying. So like we're trying to like I'm prioritizing. Uh-huh. My manager's always like,
it's important.
This yeah. is number one. This is number two. Because yeah. I'm like, I just love all of these. You know. She's like, no, but. With Girl Night Stand, I'm turning that into a TV series that we're taking out and pitching.
Amazing.
And I have a big female ensemble comedy that also has an LGBTQ arc to it in a different way. I'm really excited about that. And then I have a sports movie that's also a huge ensemble comedy. I really love big ensembles.
Okay. Wow. Is the sports one
LGBT?
Also?
Yeah.
No, but there are characters in it. The arc of it is not really. Yeah.
Got it. So it's not about softball.
Yeah. There is softball.
Okay. But right.
It's all like, come on.
Yeah. Okay, but like remember the lessons of Bend It Like Beckham because
great film.
Taylor, so our wonderful co-producer at Acast, was just bitching with me before you got here about how that movie is like quote unquote not gay, but it's like the gayest movie ever.
Yeah.
And someone needs to write that somehow, remake super
it.
Gay.
Super gay. Carol will do it.
It's a big fucking elephant in the room the whole time you're watching that movie and you're like, something doesn't feel right.
When they're dancing and she has like that little shimmery top, I'm like, you guys are gay.
Oh my, I was just having this conversation with a friend of mine about like pointing out the movies that you're like, they're in love with each other.
Yes.
When it's like not like,
yes.
like I saw, when I was like really like going through it, I saw Bride Wars. Do you remember that movie?
Oh,
like,
God.
With, like Kate Hudson and Anne Hathaway. I was like, they're in love with each other.
Right. Yeah, that would explain everything.
Me and one of my good friends went to see that movie, and we had like totally different experiences. Like we walked out, and she was like, but she was like talking about something. So,
yeah.
and I was like,
yeah.
I know lesbians.
Right.
And she's like, no, I didn't see that. And I was like, come on,
right in front of your eyes. Oh yeah.
Well, I'm having an epiphany. I think this is why I was so obsessed with Frances Ha.
Oh,
because. Let's talk about this on another episode because
okay.
I'll fall down a rabbit hole forever. But like they're very in love with each other in that movie. But it's not actually.
I think, and it's also like what we bring to the story. Like I went to see
right.
Wicked, and remember, you know that song For Good? I like started. Yeah. I was like sitting next to my ex girlfriend, and I felt like who is like was like we're never gonna be together because
I'm
not doing this. Like my family won't accept it. Blah blah. Blah. And so For Good came on. I was like. In my head, I was like, this is our breakup song.
In the middle of Wicked.
Yeah, I was like,
that is a special experience.
Well,
pretty sure no one else
that's
is having
deep.
There.
No, not one other person. But it's like really what I was feeling. And I was like, this is it.
You're like, I love you, but I have to let you go.
And then it's like families from Nebraska sitting all around you. That's
like,
awesome.
No one knows what this play is about, but I know.
On to them.
It's us. Oh my God.
So I had shared with both of you before we recorded this article that came out in the Times this weekend that got my mother all enraged. And then when she told me about it, got me all enraged. And I wanted to chat with you about it for a sec because now you are like officially hat in the ring of Hollywood. You are in it.
Ooh.
And it sounds like you're just getting in it deeper and deeper. And it's a crazy time to be getting into Hollywood right now.
Mm-hmm.
The article was like taking stock of what's happening a year after Me Too. But what it actually, I think that was, so Brooks Barnes wrote it, and I think that was his intention, was just like take the temperature. And what he discovered through interviewing lots of male like studio heads and producers and stuff all off the record was that they think they're all biding their time until this goes away.
Oh.
Yeah. And they, like, he talks about how some of them really, like, misread the room talking to him about it even. And there's this one quote. He says it was, like, a prominent male producer who was talking about Time's Up. And this guy said, yap, go back to your kennels. Talking about the women who are leading that.
Jesus Whoa. Christ.
So that, I was reading that on the subway, and I got so fucking angry about that quote. Because it's like, no one is going back. First of all, fuck you for basically implying that these women are dogs.
Yep.
Like the word kennels, Jesus Christ. But no one's fucking going back. So it's crazy that they're all just kind of like, okay, yes.
Do your thing.
Yes, ladies, right. We understand equality. We're going to try to hire you. We promise.
It's so fucking demeaning.
And hoping that it's going to blow over. So I'm glad you're storming the gates. I feel very good knowing that you are going to be among the ranks of people who are keeping this live, I assume. But yeah, like, what's your feeling about getting into
getting more? I think that there you have to create more representation, and I think, I think the stories that we're attracted to are based on like where we come from and like the lens through which we see the world. Yeah. And if you have a lot of men making the decisions, they're gonna gravitate to stories that they relate to.
Yep.
And it's really important to get more women in the position where they're making the decision
right.
to bring the stories to light that represent women across the board.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah, because I don't expect men to suddenly know how to write about women's experiences.
Right.
I just need the women to write about their own experiences.
And creating the opportunity for these stories to you know, come to fruition.
Yeah.
I think that's such a great point, because also, like, reading stuff like that, for me, I'm like, you, like, shut the fuck up. You know what I mean? Like, not even that, but, like, okay, you guys sit down, because when more women come and storm the yard, like, your voice is going to be non-existent. So if this makes you feel happy now, if, like, your insecurities mean that you need to project and call a bunch of women dogs to go back to their kennel, you do that, great. That makes you feel good. But at the end of the day, there's going to be way more Jennas that are walking in just as powerful with huge voices that are going to make moves. So, like, reading
put
that
the men in their
me,
kennels.
Well, yeah, like, that shit makes me angry, but I'm like, all right, you guys just wait and see, because it's just now things are changing, really.
Yeah. and it's wonderful to see, like, a lot of women out there
yes.
creating, and, like, because I, you know, we've, through the festivals, there's been lots of panels, and there's been lots of conversations, and I think that the most important thing is to just go out and, like, do it
yeah.
and figure out how to do it, because the more women who are doing that will create more opportunities for other women to do it
yep.
and inspiring younger filmmakers to go out and do it and continue to, like, push forward.
Exactly.
Totally. Word. Okay, I think it's time, guys.
For the wheel?
For the hot takes wheel.
Okay.
So
explain the wheel.
We have a spinning wheel. Well, I'm going to have to hold it for you. It's still a little bit under construction.
This is like my spin the bottle nightmare all over.
Yep, this actually is happening. Spin the bottle. We're going to play that right
yeah.
now.
You're going to have to whisper into my ear. So you're going to have to give it a hard spin.
Okay.
But it's just some questions that are things that Alana and I like talk about how we want to talk about them. But we're not going to spend too much time. So we're just going to go around the horn and get everyone's like hot take on the topic. So these are from our brains. Eventually, we ask that the listeners tweet us or DM us or whatever their suggestions for topics.
Cool.
But for now, you're stuck with our stupid thoughts.
I like it.
All right. So give it really a hard spin.
Give it a spin.
I'm holding it.
Oh.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Anticlimactic.
That wasn't you. Poorly constructed.
Okay. Okay. So this topic is pronouns: abolish or expand.
Oh,
we can elaborate on that a little bit to also buy you time to think about it for a second.
Yeah. Well, no, I've been thinking. Actually, I had a conversation about. I think that the pronouns. I think people should have the option to being referred how they so desire.
Agreed.
Yes. So I think what we were wondering with this question is like, does that mean we should keep coming up with new pronouns?
Oh,
like
or
more
like
and
letting
more
it settle
and more.
So
and
little, like, yeah, I think.
Or
that.
Just get rid of all of them because it's all stupid construct anyway. Like,
right.
Like how I identify as she is totally different than how you do and how
but
you
then
do.
But I guess if
we're all
you
living
think
our own.
About it, if you were to abolish, like, what do you actually refer to someone as using something that can be referred to?
Yeah, like if I'm like, oh, like she's coming on over here. Like,
well, I guess
like,
then it's like, all like they,
if it's
them.
All they, them.
They, them.
Okay, so
oh,
maybe that's the
question. That's interesting.
I think that's what abolish means.
Okay, so is it all they, them, or is it expand and create new?
Oh, gosh. Well, I think that I like having the option, but that might just be the writer in me liking.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like the character, character, because it is insightful to people into like, you know, who they are, which pronoun they yearn to be called. I think it's important to be very sensitive to what, like, how people want to be referred, but also sensitive to the fact that people are still learning how to use and incorporate the, yeah. the pronouns as well. Yeah. Like, my mom is, like so, like, she's like, I don't understand, and she's, like, trying so hard.
Yeah,
and
too.
So, like, having the patience to, you know, walk, like, moms through this, you know, process.
Yes.
But, and, like, also, like, the curiosity to ask people what their preference is.
Mm-hmm. Yes, totally.
I agree. I think that, and sometimes I have a little bit of a, not a problem, but I question they, them, because I want there to be more for a community of people who right now their only option is to use they, them.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only, quote, other pronoun.
Right.
And for me, it's like, well, we're so much more than that. Like, it almost is, like, such a bummer to be like, well, that's the only one left over. So
right.
maybe that's what we'll use. And it's like, you guys, everyone is so important.
Mm-hmm.
There needs to be pronouns, I think, that can really represent a particular group of people that maybe it's just like, well, you know, they, them, that's like, that's just what's there.
Mm-hmm.
Unless they want to be they, them. I think it's so complex, but I feel like if there were a pronoun that were like a he or a she, but can refer to non-binary individuals, that's something that gives them more credit than just, quote, the other pronoun.
Right.
Then mm-hmm. I feel like that would be something that would be interesting to
mm-hmm.
I mean, you vote for expand?
I vote for expand, yeah.
Okay.
Because I mean, the way that Jenna was saying it, I love my pronouns. I love being her, hers. You know what I mean? And it's not that, I don't know. I there's something about, you know, my womanhood and my femininity and
yeah,
my queerness that I'm proud to be a her. I love to fight for rights for her.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. And maybe that's putting too much weight behind a pronoun. At the end of the day, we're all humans and we should all be fighting for things that matter, right? I don't know. But I think for now, as of today, November 12th, I would like to expand. I vote to expand.
I'm impressed with your date recall because I can never remember what the date is.
Well, you're hungover,
so. Wow.
Called you
out. It.
Your turn.
God. I mean, every time we talk about pronouns, I get to a point of wanting to abolish them because mm-hmm. I get so confused
yeah.
about, like, matching language to experience.
Mm.
And I just feel like, yeah. I would get rid of all of them. I would say, because I feel like, I don't know, man. Like,
it's tough.
Like, if a baby is born who's identified by doctors and their parents as female at birth, and then their whole childhood they're, like, put in that category,
mm-hmm.
then I think yeah. they immediately start to feel weird when they're expected to like things they don't like.
Mm-hmm.
It's like this
yeah.
this immediate identity issue that we give every person who's born in this
right.
society, and, like, that's part of it, is this just very generic grouping
yeah.
that doesn't
yeah.
sit right with, no one sits 100% right with the gender expectations that they're given, right? But maybe that's not a pronoun problem. Maybe it's how we talk about gender
yeah,
problem.
I don't know, honestly, Jess. I don't know. I think that
that's okay.
No, I think you have a point. There are babies that are born and they are assigned a gender or a sex that they don't agree with, you know, therefore trans community, non-binary, you know, the world is so complex. But I think that there are people that exist that were assigned a gender that is truly them. Not to say that it's okay because everyone, you know what I mean? I feel like it exists
yeah.
like everything else exists. I don't know how to answer your question because it's really fucking complicated. And
well,
I
too bad it's on the
myself.
Hot takes wheel.
Yeah.
So you're supposed to give a hot
That's
take and move
fault.
On.
But it's tough. Like, I think about things a lot, especially with this, because my mom too has a hard time, and she's a scientist. She was a microbiologist for the U.S. Army, so she has, like, a very scientific brain, but she's also super liberal, and is just, like, loves love and everything's great. But when she talks to me scientifically, she's like, but can you describe non-binary, because the chromosome, and she starts going
yeah.
to the science world, and I'm like, no, ma, that's not, it's so much more than science.
Yeah.
But I don't know where I'm going with that, other than it's just so much more than what we are programmed / know and learn.
Sure.
That's why I like expanding, because it's like, let's just give people the fucking option.
Right. There's something I was thinking a lot about this the other day, because I was at the movies and I overheard this mother talking to her little girl about, like, the poster, and
mm-hmm.
she was pointing to the character. I think it was, like, the Nutcracker. And she's like, isn't she beautiful?
Yeah.
Isn't she she's like such a princess. And I think, like, what you're saying, when
yeah,
you're
I hate
when
that.
You're as, like, a child, and like you start to be almost assigned a certain role, that if you feel outside of that role, it creates this like tension because it doesn't fit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And instead of like, you know, using those words that are not specific to gender, you know, like strong, intelligent.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Yeah.
Such a great, such a great point. I actually fell victim to that the other day. I went to one of my old coworkers / good friends' homes, and she has a 1-year-old now, baby girl. And when I went up to say hi to Dylan, I was like, Dylan, do you know how beautiful you are? Do you know how perfect you are? And then I looked at myself and I was like, ew, Alana. And I was like, but you're smart and you're strong and you are an independent woman. But the first thing that came to my mouth when I saw the baby girl is, you have to know you're the most beautiful little baby.
Yeah.
You know, and I was
something
like,
habitual.
Disappointed.
There's something habitual about it.
I was super disappointed in myself for doing that because as like a independent, you know, like queer feminist woman, it's like, why did I instantly, the first thing that came in my mouth was assigning this little baby something that, you know, it's so surface.
Yeah, like, oh, you're such a beautiful princess.
Yeah.
And it's like, wait.
What?
Let me start over.
Because we're programmed, we're conditioned like that.
Yeah.
So it's up to us to change. But agree. I think what you're saying is true, that when you're born, you should not be automatically assigned. If you are, I think it's very important to go with Jenna's point that you use words and give them opportunities and environments where they don't feel like they have to be in that category.
Right. Yeah, I'm just saying, let's stop assuming we know anything about somebody based on their gender.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
That's all.
Okay, so we agree.
Great. Good hot takes, everybody.
Hot take.
Thank you, Jenna, for being so our tough guinea pig with that.
Thank you for having me. I wish I spun it harder, but I like the conversation that came out of my weak spin.
There you go.
That was one that was a scary one, too.
Yeah. Okay, so Lesbomb is now available all the places people find streaming movies.
Yeah, so we're in theaters. Or
let's talk about December.
Weeks. Yeah.
What will the situation be?
We are still in a few theaters. Cool. If you go to lesbomovie.com, you'll see screenings and events, and it'll list where we are.
Great.
And then, yeah, obviously we're available on in the iTunes, Amazon, Google Play, all of those.
But I will encourage people, if you can, see in a theater, because it's totally the kind of movie you want to see with an audience who's laughing around you.
Yeah, it's
and
a
everyone
fun movie.
Was laughing around us.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
And not just because they were related to you.
Yeah.
That was only actually one person, I think.
I know, because when you were like, this audience, I was like, I wonder who's there.
Just your uncle and his friends.
He was so sweet when we were leaving. He was like, thanks for coming.
Oh, he's so cute.
Yeah, and then I stuttered and I was like, congrats. Congrats on being depicted so lovingly. Your niece didn't roast you. Because it could go either way.
Guys
so guys, go find it. And I guess we'll just keep following you in the trade papers to see, see what you do
crossed.
Next.
Hello.
Yeah.
Yeah, guys, you have to go see it. Great movie. I can't echo it enough. It for anyone, straight, gay, non-binary, whatever it is, please go see it. It's just a great movie. Super
especially
fun
around
for
the holidays.
Exactly. Mm.
When we say it at the same time, must be true.
Aww, we wink at each other. Uh-huh. Right. But yeah, thank you so much for coming. This was
No, rad. Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure talking to you both.
All right, that's it for today's episode of the Female Gaze Podcast. Remember to subscribe everywhere that you find your podcast so you get each new episode each week popping up in your business. You can be like, oh, what's that? Oh, it's a new episode of my new favorite podcast. Ready to get my mind blown by some badass people on the Female Gaze. That would be our guest, not us. and Alana, do you want to remind everyone?
Yeah, so follow us on social media at
Female Gaze Pod.
That's my porn voice, Female Gaze Pod.
Wow.
On Instagram and Twitter. Don't judge the lack of followers we have right now. Although maybe when you listen to this, we'll be crushing it. But at Female Gaze Pod. Female Gaze Pod. Follow us, slide in our DMs with all the good things.
Yeah, send us topics for the hot takes wheel.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to come up with them anymore.
Yeah.
Give us some new ideas.
Yeah, and if you heard something that we talked about on an episode and you just want to chat more, learn more, or just talk, that's what we're here for.
Yep. And I do want to mention, we just had a hot takes debate about pronouns with 3 cis people. We will be having some non-cis people on the show to get into that. So it's just the beginning of a very long, ongoing conversation.
That's right.
So don't worry. We're aware.
We're aware. We're all about education, educating ourselves.
First and foremost.
That's right. And having conversations.
There you go. Just chatting.
We're chatting.
All right. See you guys next week.
All right. Bye, guys.